Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, David Onick. Our topic this hour is Neighbor Nest, a community learning center recently opened by Twitter across the street from its mid-market headquarters. Twitter made headlines a few weeks ago when it debuted Neighbor Nest as part of its community benefits agreement with the city of San Francisco. In exchange for 6 years of payroll tax exemptions, Twitter and several other tech companies have moved into the mid-market area and committed to stipulations like employee volunteer hours and millions of dollars in philanthropy. Neighbor Nest, run in collaboration with partners like Compass Family Services and the Community Technology Network, aims to provide a space where homeless and low-income residents of Twitter's neighborhood can access computers, childcare services, and other creative programs we'll hear more about in this hour. City officials hope that community benefits agreements, along with the partnerships and shared spaces like Neighbor Nest that they inspire, will revitalize the mid-market area. Can companies like Twitter successfully harness their funds and employee tech expertise for the good of those living around the corner from their offices? As San Francisco struggles with rising housing costs and other side effects of the tech boom, how can we work towards a prosperity that is shared by all? Joining me in studio to discuss these issues are Caroline Berlerin, Head of Community Outreach and Philanthropy at Twitter. Welcome, Caroline.
Thank you.
Cami Griffiths, Executive Director and Co-Founder of the Community Technology Network. Welcome, Cami.
Thank you.
And Erica Kirsch, Executive Director of Compass Family Services. Welcome, Erica.
Thanks for having me.
Shortly, we'll invite you, our listeners, to call in and join our conversation. You can also email us now at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment on klw.org, or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. Caroline, let's start with you. How did the idea of Neighbor Nest first come about?
Thanks so much for the opportunity to speak about the Neighbor Nest. We're really excited about this program. I think the first thing that's important for your listeners to know is that Twitter is a San Francisco company. We were born in San Francisco 9 years ago, and we moved to the mid-market area about two and a half years ago. The mid-market neighborhood is an area that is incredibly poor. And while moving there, we recognized that we wanted to be able to provide resources like technology, deploy our employees as volunteers into the community. And that's where the idea of the Neighbor Nest started. What we did was we started with a listening tour, a six-month listening tour, to really help inform the design of the Neighbor Nest. And we knew we couldn't go at it alone. We appreciated that the issues of the neighborhood were too complex. So we teamed up with phenomenal partners like Compass Family Services that works with the community each and every day and has for the past 100 years.
I want to ask about that listening tour. What types of things did you hear? What was expected? What was surprising?
So for about 6 months, we sat down and we spoke with low-income homeless families as part of the Compass Family Services community. We spoke with nonprofit leaders. We spoke with Twitter volunteers. And I think what was surprising is when we met folks like Elizabeth, a 21-year-old mom of two kids who's lived in San Francisco her whole life, and she's never touched a computer. So if we just think about the opportunities that she's locked out from, opportunities from housing, opportunities around employment, resources for her kids, and realizing that those opportunities are ones that would be accessible to most people in San Francisco but weren't accessible to our whole community. And the other thing we discovered that was a surprise is while we think technology can be the forefront of the solution, what really is important is the community and community supporting community and also the magic of childcare. So while designing the Twitter Neighbor Nest, we incorporated the role that community could play in the programming of building bridges between our nonprofit partners, the clients of those nonprofits, and the Twitter volunteers, providing the technology, the programming, the workshops to learn, connect, and grow, but also offering that child care to reduce barriers for folks like Elizabeth.
Erica Kirsch from Compass Family Services. Twitter approached you. Is that how this got started? And tell me what those early conversations were like when this was just a scenario being dreamed up.
Yeah. Funnily enough, the Nest idea sort of came out of a conversation at a cocktail party between folks from Twitter and folks from Compass. And the conversation was Twitter wanted to do something big to support the community. And we batted around the different ideas, the different service gaps, and we wound up at the end of the day with this being kind of the perfect fit. Compass has been helping San Franciscans for the past 100 years, the San Franciscans in the greatest need. And our focus these days is on families that are homeless or at risk of homelessness. And there are a lot of families in need out there. And Twitter obviously has the technology expertise. So, you know, the partnership kind of was the perfect fit. We would bring our expertise and our families that don't have access to technology, and Twitter would provide a space and volunteer staff who would come and mentor and teach our clients in a community that was friendly and warm and welcoming for both kids and parents. And that's kind of where it all began.
And Cammie Griffiths, how did the Community Technology Network get involved?
Well, we were lucky enough to have a board member who is working in the same building as Caroline, and they ran into each other in the elevator and struck up a conversation, because Matt's kind of good that way, and said, hey, I hear about your neighbor, Ness. You know, Community Technology Network is doing a lot of work around digital literacy and closing the digital divide. Perhaps there's a place for Community Technology Network. So we met with them about a year ago and had a really great meeting. I have to say, like, we're all sort of in love with each other at the end of the meeting. Like, this is great. And, you know,
How do you get from that to opening, though? Because that's kind of the easy part in some ways, right? And then there's a lot of stuff about rolling up the sleeves to make this a reality.
Well, that was 12 months ago. And after the meeting, I thought, well, this is going to be great. We're going to get started. And then, you know, they had a lot of work to do, a lot of planning meetings. And when we got back involved about 6 months ago, we saw all the incredible work that they did with the needs assessments and the listening tour and so much great data that they pulled from it, that once we got involved in providing more recommendations around the computer center configuration of the computers and the lab and potential programming that could be offered, because our expertise is really around training trainers to teach free computer classes and working with new computer users, which isn't something that you just do correctly the first time. I've seen a lot of people make some serious mistakes. But that's the role that we'll play, is really engaging those volunteers in service and how can they best serve the needs of the Compass Family Services families.
So you will be training the trainers who are volunteers from Twitter?
Correct.
And I think that is a key part of this, because one of the big things I know the city is grappling with is so if there is an urge for people to volunteer, but they don't quite know how or know how to fit in or how they can be helpful, that can quickly lead to frustration both for the residents and for the volunteers if they aren't actually doing something that is useful.
Exactly. And so you have to both have lots of opportunities for people to plug in, one-time opportunities, ongoing, something for young, something for old, and then help the volunteers understand that they may run into a time when there's nobody in the room to help. And there may be too many people to help at the same time. And how do you juggle it all? And sometimes in other partner locations, the computer or the internet even goes down. So you have to share, like, how do you deal teaching computers when there's no internet? So you have to show the volunteers there's this great need, and here's the issue that families are facing. And at the same time, they might not show up because they might have missed their bus, or a kid might be sick, or there's all these other issues that are leading to folks being in this situation in the first place. And so teaching the volunteers to have some empathy towards a whole sector of our society that they may know nothing about, and to really kind of bring it all to the neighbor nest and really help share as much as they can about what they know about the internet and how they can help people connect to the resources and all the opportunities that are available online.
Caroline Berliner of Twitter, you had these community partners. You could have given them grants to just do their work. Why was the idea to build something new, to build a community hub and work collaboratively with them rather than simply supporting the good people who are already doing work in the community?
Twitter believes that philanthropy needs to go beyond simply the financial investment, and we really want to roll up our sleeves and partner arm in arm with our nonprofit partners and our community members. We think that no one sector really caused all these problems, and no one sector will solve all these problems. So we really want to go at it together. And that's really why we designed the Neighbor Nest as a warm, welcoming, family-friendly location where our nonprofit partners and their clients can come access technology, resources, workshops to learn, connect, and grow together. And I think that together part is what's really important. Everyone's craving community. Our Twitter engineers want to give back, want to make a difference. The nonprofit partners want to understand how to access resources at Twitter. And so forming partnerships by creating a physical space, putting down deep roots in the community, is what we really wanted to do by opening up the Twitter Neighbor Nest.
And I want to talk more about the desires of your employees, because I think most tech firms don't seem to understand that offering pro bono service can be a, you know, law firms tout their pro bono services all the time, recruiting young lawyers, saying, hey, come work for us. You can do great pro bono work. You don't see tech companies talking about that very much when it brings meaning to people's lives, and just seems to me that it could be a recruiting, a retention benefit to these companies that they're not utilizing right now.
Definitely. Twitter,
in addition to all the other good reasons to do it.
Yes, exactly. Twitter is a purpose-driven company, and people come to work there because they want to make a meaningful difference in the world. And there are Twitter employees out there volunteering each and every day. Employees like Robert, who's an engineer who's worked there for 4 years, who you'll find every Thursday at Glide, Fried Chicken Thursday, volunteering, and women engineering team members who are working with Girls Who Code every week. And I think that creating that culture of being a force for good gets contagious and is part of the culture that the founders cared about at Twitter and lives on today, and is part of the reasons people want to work at Twitter, stay at Twitter, get development at Twitter, and attract additional talent for Twitter.
And the investment, as I understand it, is about $3 million over the next 4 years. Can you explain, not dollar for dollar, but generally, where is that $3 million going? Where is that investment going?
Sure. So it is a $3 million investment over the next 4 years, and that's in addition to $3 million of grants we'll be providing to the mid-market Tenderloin South of Market area. The $3 million broken down, a lot of it has to do with the infrastructure of remodeling the space and the technology and the infrastructure of the space, providing the grants for our nonprofit partners that we're going to be collaborating with to help design the programming at the Neighbor Nest, the technology infrastructure, and the staffing.
Erica Kirsch from Compass Family Services, I'd like to turn to you now to talk some about the space itself. How did you help design a space that would be welcoming to your clients who may see this as very foreign, a tech company coming in? Some of them, as we just discussed, have never even been on a computer before. How do you create a space that they would feel safe coming to receive services?
Mm-hmm. Well, Compass, and I personally was involved in the design of the Nest from the very first, from day one. And, you know, early on, we were talking about, you know, computers and hardware and software, but we were also talking about what kind of snacks and how should they be delivered for the children and what the play area should look like. And, you know, where are people going to put their strollers, and homeless families who might have some of their belongings with them, creating lockers so that they could put their, you know, their belongings in lockers. So everything was about making it really family friendly. And the idea of the Nest is that's a place where families can come and learn technology skills, access computers, but we're enticing families to come to the Nest by offering some other activities that might be less threatening, like yoga and story hour for their children, a movie night. So for some families, the idea of coming to use a computer lab is really exciting in itself, but for some families, it might be a little more threatening. So we want to get the families to feel like it's a warm and welcoming and family-friendly place where they can come and do whatever it is they need to do. And hopefully we can teach them some great skills along the way that will help them with employment, with housing, and with being able to help their kids with their education, just get them into the 21st century.
And Compass has been around, speaking of 21st century, for about a century, right?
Yes.
And so you've had a lot of partnerships over the years. What's different about this one?
Family homelessness is a huge issue, and it's not one that can be solved without the help and support of the entire community. What's special about this partnership is, you know, this is something that we designed together from the very start about a year ago. You know, there was nothing that was already built. There was nothing that was already planned. And using Twitter's expertise in one realm and Compass's expertise in another, we created from scratch this center, this magical center that, you know, hopefully will be an exciting hub in the community for families like the families that Compass serves.
Terrific. Well, we're going to invite the community to call in just a moment and join our conversation. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KLW San Francisco, and on the web at klw.org. Tonight, we're discussing NeighborNest, Twitter's new community learning center, with my guests, Caroline Berlarin, head of community outreach and philanthropy at Twitter, Cammie Griffiths, executive director of the Community Technology Network, and Erica Kish, executive director of Compass Family Services. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. Do you have ideas for NeighborNest programming? What do you think tech companies can do to give back to their neighbors? The number to join to call our the number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment on our website, klw.org, or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. I want to talk a little bit about the community NeighborNest is serving. Erica Kish from Compass, you've been working with this community for a long, long time. Can you describe some of the struggles that community members face, and maybe talk in particular, give one or two examples of folks that you think would particularly benefit from what's happening at the NeighborNest?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So Compass Family Services serves families that are either homeless or at risk of homelessness. And you know, for the most part, families come to us in crisis. They either are at risk of losing their housing, or they're homeless and they might have been homeless for quite a while. Getting into the shelter system is difficult and takes a while these days because there's so much demand and not enough supply. Many of the families have, you know, a lot of other barriers that are getting in the way of them finding stability. There are so many things that have to be done these days using technology. I have been, like you said, with Compass for a very long time, 20 years. And when I first started, when a family came to us and needed to look for housing or look for jobs, we would put them at a table in a chair where we had subscriptions to all of the local newspapers. And we'd say, here, this is where you're going to look for housing. This is where you're going to look for a job. Obviously, things are different these days, and all of that is done using technology. All of that is done online, using computers, and so much more. So families need to be able to have that access to technology to do those basic things like find housing, find jobs, figure out how their children are doing in school, apply for food stamps. It's so much easier to do that when you can do it online than if you have to go down in person and wait with your children. You know, it's really kind of endless. And even just for families that are homeless, that are isolated, the idea of being able to connect to folks that they're, you know, cut off from in other parts of the country or other parts of the world. You know, the idea that families can come to the Nest and use Skype and call their family members that they haven't talked to in ages in a quiet, safe place where their children are cared for. Just breaking down all those barriers for families is really important.
And Cammie Griffiths from the Community Technology Network, what has your organization's experience been working with the community prior to NeighborNest?
So we have a background in helping build the capacity of nonprofits, and they're offering computer training to their community. So we have a partnership with the Department of Aging. It's called SF Connected, where we're in 30 senior centers providing training for their staff, training for their volunteers. We bring in our own volunteers, and we're serving hundreds and hundreds of seniors and people with disabilities a week. But we've also partnered with housing developments and libraries. The lack of trainers is really the problem. There's computer centers all over the place, and granted, those computers are old and sometimes not operational. But at the end of the day, if you don't have someone there helping you learn how to use the computer isn't going to show you how to learn it. There are great tutorials. There's lots of YouTube videos that show you everything you could possibly want to know. But having somebody to answer, well, why did that happen? What's happening now? Well, you're hitting the right click. You know, there's all sorts of things that the computer's not as intuitive as the developers like to think it is. And even just applying for a job is extremely difficult. If you don't have an email address, then you have that as the first barrier. And so my expertise personally is I started as a computer instructor as a volunteer in New York City almost 10 years ago and learned all about the needs of the community and have brought that passion for getting people online to San Francisco in Community Technology Network. And it's really amazing to see volunteers get involved in the community and helping out. And it really makes the volunteer volunteers feel good. We've had volunteers that, you know, they volunteer at 10 a.m. on a Saturday. Who wants to do that? But by the time they're done, they're like, I feel so great. This was so fun. And to know that you're helping somebody do something that will change their lives, literally, I mean, how often do we get that opportunity? So that's really what we've been providing.
So it seems like one of the biggest challenges you were facing was having enough volunteers to have those human beings there. And so this must have just seemed like an incredible opportunity for you to have these very tech-savvy young people looking for opportunities to volunteer in a community that desperately needed the services.
It's amazing for so many reasons. One, there's so many employees. They all know how to use the computer really well. It's right across the street from where they'd be volunteering, so there's no excuse about, oh, I have to travel all the way to wherever. And there's support from Twitter. They're getting to take time off of work and go to do volunteering, and not all companies do that, so that's pretty remarkable. Some of the volunteers, we just had a meeting there last week to get to know what the volunteers want, what some barriers might be, and interestingly enough, some expressed that they're not sure that they have enough understanding to be able to teach. And I guess they just don't understand how basic the skills are that we're trying to convey to the folks that will be coming to the Nest. So we definitely need more volunteers, and there's information on our website, ctnbayarea.org, if people want to learn how to volunteer for us.
Great. Let's go to the phones now. We have Margie calling from San Francisco. Margie, welcome to City Visions.
Thank you very much. Hi, I want to thank you. This is a really good-hearted effort, and I would never want to stand in the way of any other efforts by tech companies to do this work. My question is a question of numbers. If Twitter were to have paid payroll tax for the next 6 years, what is the numerical value compared to the $3 million grant? Big companies that make a lot of profits often have another aspect, which is philanthropy and volunteering. But I'd like to know, if you were to crunch the numbers, if Twitter were to pay payroll tax for the next 6 years, what would be the comparable amount compared to this very excellent effort that you're doing right now?
Margie, thank you for your call. Caroline Barlerin from Twitter.
Margie, thanks so much for that thoughtful question. I honestly don't know the numbers. I do know about our $3 million commitment for the Neighbor Nest and our additional $3 million that we're going to be doing in grants over the next 4 years. But I don't know what that translates to for answering your question. I think, you know, Twitter is making a long-term commitment to this community and making an investment, putting down deep roots in the community. And I really appreciate the question, but I don't have the answer for that.
Well, let's just take a step back. The payroll tax exemption was obviously very controversial in the city, right? It was a big political issue, strong opinions on both sides. It passed. It's a reality now. So to what extent is there some resistance to what you're doing from people who just thought that shouldn't have happened in the first place? And regardless of what you do now, they're going to be looking to be critical for that reason.
So what I do have is some numbers from the Office of Economic Workforce Development. I had a meeting with them today about kind of what's the difference between 2011 Market Street and today Market Street. And they shared with me the fact that there's now 17 tech companies in the neighborhood that weren't there before, two venture companies, two co-working spaces, 13 art venues, and 30 new small businesses in a neighborhood that before really had a lot of empty, abandoned storefronts. So that is one area of change that we can point to that has changed since 2011.
But I want to ask the nonprofits involved now, because, again, regardless of people's positions, you're now trying to implement a program that, by all accounts, seems to be very innovative. Are you getting pushback from any of your nonprofit partners about being involved in this, because the entire tax break, which led to this, was very controversial?
I think that, you know, the nonprofit community, and I know certainly Compass, recognizes that, you know, there's going to be this is change to the neighborhood, change to the community, and there's going to be pluses and minuses. And, you know, yes, rents are higher. There are more businesses that are coming into the community. There are good and bad in all of that. And we are just appreciative that these companies, Twitter among them, have decided that they want to partner with us. And, you know, the partnerships have been fruitful. They've benefited our families. They've benefited our organizations. And again, as I said, you know, homelessness is a huge problem, and it's not something that we can solve alone. So we are very appreciative for the support.
Cammie Griffiths?
There's no pushback. I mean, I think we all see the changes happening and the rents raising, but it's not any one company's fault. It's not the city's fault. It's a collective change that's happening. It has translated into more volunteers coming to our organization, so I'm thankful for that. And perhaps it's creating more of a need for our services as well. But we're here to do this work together. And I think the more that tech companies can just recognize there are issues that our employees can help with, and helping their employees understand what those issues are and connecting them to organizations like ours, then we can all work together to improve San Francisco.
And to what extent is what Twitter's doing and some other companies, I think Zendesk has a very good reputation in this regard, there's so many companies here now. Are you seeing more interest from other companies with companies like Twitter taking the lead?
Well, I know that.
Or is it too early to tell since you really just opened this?
Well, I'm excited about Zendesk's new foundation that they just launched and the funding that they provide to the Tenderloin Tech Lab. It shows that companies are investing in digital literacy or digital inclusion, which is my passion, and I just hope to see more funds be made available for the training aspect of this work. So that's a pretty exciting advance.
And Caroline, let me go back to you. I know it's early again. This just opened in May. But have you begun to get feedback from Twitter employees about what this has meant to them?
So we've conducted over 100 hours of programming prior to the opening. And while we're doing the programming of basic housing workshops and employment workshops and computer skills in partnership with Compass, we've also had this outpouring of enthusiasm for our Twitter employees who want to teach classes. So working with them, we've designed curriculum on digital citizenship, helping kids be good internet digital citizens and internet safety, helping nonprofits figure out their Twitter, so Twitter for nonprofits, to really help amplify their voice using a Twitter platform. And also Coding for Kids, a class where we are working with Catholic charities and having our engineers share their passion and love for coding with some of the youngsters in the neighborhood to learn about Scratch and Raspberry Pi, which has been fantastic. So our employees are really, really excited to be giving back in a meaningful way, and they're doing that thanks to the Neighbor Nest being a platform for them to give back.
You're listening to City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KLW San Francisco, and on the web at klw.org. Tonight, we're discussing Neighbor Nest, Twitter's new community learning center, with my guests, Caroline Berlerin from Twitter, Cammie Griffiths from the Community Technology Network, and Erica Kish from Compass Family Services. Again, we invite you to call in with your questions or comments. What ideas do you have for Neighbor Nest programming, and what do you think tech companies can do to give back to their neighbors? The number again to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment on klw.org, or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. Let's now go to Jennifer in San Francisco, who's on the line. Jennifer, welcome to City Visions.
Hi, thank you. I just had a quick question. I think it's really lovely that Twitter is helping out families in this way, but how are they helping out the homeless population, which it seems that there are vast amounts of single people that aren't part of families that are homeless in the city? Are they going to be working with those people in the future, or just families? And I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer, very much for that question. You've talked a lot about making the Neighbor Nest family friendly. What about single adults?
So one of the things we uncovered, Jennifer, during our listening tour is really recognizing that there are 4,000 children in the Tenderloin. And the Tenderloin is one of the most low-income areas of San Francisco. And so focusing on low-income homeless families was something we really wanted to invest in through the Twitter Neighbor Nest. We're partnering with Compass. We're also partnering with other organizations around families for right now. In addition to that, we definitely do provide cash grants, technology support, and volunteering for some of the phenomenal organizations that are also supporting adult single individuals who happen to be homeless or low income, organizations like Glide, St. Anthony's, and others. So while we are kind of embracing the issue of homelessness at large, our focus for the Twitter Neighbor Nest is really on low income and homeless families.
And if I could ask each of you that same question in terms of helping single adults as well. Compass, I know you do focus. Your whole name is Family Services. But what would you say about helping others in the community who may not be part of a family?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of needy populations. And there are, you know, the parallel to the Nest would probably be St. Anthony's Tenderloin Tech Lab, which is a great resource for single adults. And one of the things that makes the Nest really accessible and welcoming and safe place for families is that it's just families. You know, families can come in, know that their children are being watched, and don't have to worry about supervision or who else is on site. So there's something good and special about it being a place that's dedicated to parents with children. And of course, there needs to be other resources than there are for single adults.
So you really looked at what the need was, what was missing, and decided this is really what was necessary, Caroline.
Definitely, David. We wanted to complement all of the incredible services that are already offered in the Tenderloin Mid-Market SoMa area. And when we kind of did that needs assessment, we uncovered the fact that the low-income and homeless families was an area that there wasn't the access to the technology that many of the other populations may have.
And a lot of people don't realize the statistic that you raised, which is how many young children there are in the Tenderloin.
In the heart of St. Francis's City, there are 4,000 children in the Tenderloin, and they're not the faces you see on the street, but those are the children that we don't want their zip code to determine their future. And great organizations like Compass, Boys and Girls Club, Catholic Charities are really doing phenomenal work to help these kids on a pathway out of poverty, and we hope the Neighbor Nest provides a vehicle to help support their work.
And can I just add that Caroline did mention earlier, but when the listening tour took place, part of it was also going to all the other tech centers in the area and visiting them and seeing kind of what was offered and what was not offered. And we talked from the start about having, you know, forming some sort of consortium so that, you know, if someone comes to the lab that doesn't fit our demographic, that we can easily refer them over to the Curry Senior Center or the Tenderloin Tech Lab and vice versa.
Or the public library that does phenomenal work.
And I think we have a caller who has just such a question. So let's go to that now. We have Jackie from SoMa on the line. Jackie, welcome to City Visions.
Hi, thanks for this program. I'm a 51-year-old disabled person who's formerly homeless and living in SoMa. And I actually have an engineering background. I did assembly language programming, but that was in the late 80s. I'm wondering if there's an opportunity for someone such as myself to learn modern coding to make myself employable at a company such as Twitter.
Cammie Griffiths from the Community Technology Network.
Well, Jackie, do you have internet at home and you're able to use the computer at home?
Yes.
So there are some really awesome websites like Code Academy and Treehouse. I think Code Academy is free, and I think that Treehouse, you could actually get enrolled in a program through BayVac. They have a partnership with Treehouse where you wouldn't have to pay. And BayVac in general would be a good place for you to check out. They've got great training for the higher level folks.
And it's Bay Area Video Coalition is what the acronym stands for.
Thank you. Sorry, I forget. And so to go online and look to see what's already about out there as far as online tutorials that you could access. And then there's some other, like Hack Reactor is a for-profit, but they've been doing a lot of work with their volunteers or engaging their employees and volunteers. So that might be another place you could email them and say, could you get paired with one of their students?
Okay, well, I really appreciate it.
Certainly.
Jackie, thank you very much for the call. You know, you talked some about how to make Neighbor Nest a welcoming place for folks to come. You talked about yoga classes. I also understand you had the cast of the Book of Mormon come and visit. How did that come about? And did residents know what the Book of Mormon was?
Yes, we did. That was really fantastic. There's a group of, Broadway performers that when they're in town, they like to give back in some way, shape, or form, and they contacted Compass Family Services. And I think the conversation started with they were willing to come over and, like, clean our shelter. And we said, no, we don't want you to clean our shelter. We want you to sing and dance. So they came and they sung and danced with the big group of kids and moms. And I'm not sure that the families actually were really familiar with Book of Mormon, but they had an amazing time. These people brought such energy and got the kids involved and taught them, you know, a fancy dance and took pictures with them and just hung out with them. And it was really pretty amazing.
Are there other ideas like that in the works, or is it too early to tell kind of innovative things that could be brought in by this partnership?
I think the sky's the limit. You know, we just want to make it a place where families are comfortable to come. I know one thing that we're talking about doing in July is the school district gives out school uniforms for kids in advance of the school year to homeless families, and doing that fitting and distribution of uniforms at the Nest. It's just another way to bring families to the Nest so they can walk in and see, wow, this place is amazing and I want to come back here and learn computer skills. So, you know, I think that, like I said, the sky's the limit.
If someone in the community wanted to use the space for some community event, how would they go about contacting someone to say, hey, can you provide the space for me? Because it seems like a win-win, because they need the space. And as you were saying, if you have trusted nonprofits working out of the space, that's going to get community members feeling safe to come, and then maybe they'll learn about all the other things you're doing.
Definitely. So right now, we are piloting this summer with our core Twitter nonprofit partners, our grantees and organizations that are serving the Tenderloin mid-market and south of market areas. In the future, there'll be a possibility for other organizations to reach out and apply, and that would be sf@twitter.com to learn about ways to get involved with the Twitter Neighbor Nest. We're definitely open to exploring lots of different opportunities. A One Degree is kind of a Yelp of resources for low-income folks. And they've reached out to us about doing classes on kind of navigating mobile resources through their app at the Nest. So we want to open it up as much as we can while making it warm, welcoming, and friendly for the community that we're serving.
Terrific. Let's take a final station break. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KLW San Francisco, and on the web at klw.org. Tonight, we're discussing NeighborNest, Twitter's new community learning center. My guests from Twitter, we have Caroline Berlerin. From the Community Technology Network, we have Cammie Griffiths. And from Compass Family Services, we have Erica Kish. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments, your ideas, your questions about the NeighborNest. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You can also shoot us an email at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment on klw.org, or tweet us at cityvisionsKALW. I'd love to hear from all of you. I know it's early, but have you I asked about feedback you've gotten from individual volunteers. What about feedback Compass has gotten, or the Community Technology Network has gotten, from clients, residents who are being served? What is the feedback in the early going about how people are experiencing this partnership?
The feedback so far has been extremely positive. The families are very excited about this space that's been created, really, you know, to meet their needs and to serve them. For Compass, it's perfect because the Nest just happens to be located just really in the geographic center of all of our locations. So it's really convenient and easy to access for our families. And, you know, there's also the piece for a lot of our families that this is something that's connected to Twitter, that Twitter created. So there's that kind of cachet that makes it special and exciting, particularly for the young people.
And what about from Community Technology Network? Again, it's early, but what is the feedback that you're hearing?
We haven't actually done any training for the volunteers or training in the
You're just getting geared up still.
Just getting geared up and very excited about the opportunity. I did want to circle back about the last question about where single adults could go to.
Oh, please do.
Because the SF Connected program is specifically for older adults and people with disabilities, and there's 50 locations around San Francisco specifically for those individuals. So if you go to if you Google SF Connected, but if you're not online, that wouldn't be very helpful. But you could certainly, folks can contact Community Technology Network to find out more information about where they can go to access one of these computer centers. They're all free. There's trainers who speak English, Spanish, Russian, and Chinese to help out. And there's two other nonprofits providing trainers. So there's a lot of support for older adults and people with disabilities in San Francisco through that program, SF Connected.
And can you tell us, we were talking about it a little offline before we went on the air, can you tell us a little bit about that partnership? partnership for that program?
Sure. It's an excellent... Well, the city got funding through the federal government for these computers, 250 computers, and partnered with these agencies like ours to provide the trainers, recognizing that it's not the computers that they need so much as the trainers. And now it's really flourished. After the federal funds ran out, the city decided to continue funds. And now there's an opportunity to increase the funding for that. There's a hearing on the 19th for the supervisors. It's a keep us connected. We're really encouraging the city to increase funding to that program so we can get more trainers, especially bilingual trainers. There's a lot of monolingual seniors out there who aren't being served because they can't speak the language.
I want to turn to one of what seems to be really at the heart of this, which is childcare, and which is so essential across so many range of issues. You see, childcare and transportation, I would say, are two of the things that really keep folks from getting connected to the services they need. By being right there in the community, the transportation issue is hopefully minimal for folks who are coming. But tell us how you decided to focus on childcare and what the early results of that have been.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it was really a no-brainer. I mean, none of the services we provide can be successful without childcare. You know, parents need to be able to focus, and sometimes they need to be able to talk about sensitive issues, and it's not helpful for them or for their children to be present, you know, in the room during those times. And we don't want kids to have to be sitting by their parents while they're, you know, learning computer skills. So the child care at the Nest is, you know, it's a warm and welcoming little area. We have folks that have been hired specifically to provide the child care activities and games, and the idea of, you know, maybe bringing in like a drummer, and we have story hour. It's things that kids can do when their parents are there, so it's fun for them too, so they want to go just like their parents want to go.
And just to add to that, in addition to Twitter employees volunteering, there's been an incredible outpouring of generosity of employees doing a toy drive to help provide the Neighbor Nest with all the kind of latest and greatest toys or different easels and different things for the children. And so that's been really fantastic. In addition to, you know, our facilities team making a donation to Compass to help support the Neighbor Nest, and some of the Compass clients saying, how can I get involved? How can I volunteer? Or I have a teenage son who's pretty good with computers, could he come volunteer here? So it's been really remarkable, the kind of lightning rod of generosity we've seen through the Neighbor Nest in such a short period of time.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We have Sheila calling. Sheila, welcome to City Visions.
Hi. I had a question about expansion and, I guess, sustainability of a program. If the partnership between Twitter and the community development organizations is successful, would they consider expanding out to other parts of California that don't have access to technology companies? And would they be interested in expanding out to other states like Nebraska or Arizona that also don't have as much access to technology?
Sheila, thanks for your question. Caroline, I know you're just getting started, but I would love to hear your response as you look at the big picture further out.
Sheila, so I think we love the question about looking at expansion, but for today, we're going to keep our heads down to ensure the success of the Twitter Neighbor Nest we've just opened. We definitely want to see if there's models there that could be replicated or best practices that could be shared across other locations, other organizations across the state and across the nation. But for right now, we're gonna stick to the Neighbor Nest, which is across the street from Twitter headquarters.
And, you know, kind of related to that, at Compass Family Services, you're providing so many different services. How much of your work is now being funneled to the Neighbor Nest? Is it affecting your ability to do some of the other great things you've been doing all these years?
It's really augmenting what we do. You know, part of the challenge in the beginning is getting folks in the habit of going over to the Nest, of even, you know, figuring out where it is the very first time. So to start with, we're offering some of our regular programming that we offer at our counseling center over at the Nest, just on a temporary basis to get families in the habit of coming over there and, you know, basically walking them to the Nest from our headquarters. So I don't think in the long run it's going to disrupt or get in the way of what we do. We do feel like it's important with our population that when they show up at the Nest, there is someone on site who has the skills and the expertise of dealing with, you know, the more social service kind of issues that our families face, you know, along with the folks that can teach them computer skills. Another great thing that's happened that we totally didn't expect was that we've got families. Compass has 7 different programs providing different types of services for families, everything from shelter, transitional housing, childcare for families in need. And we had families from different programs showing up at the Nest for similar activities or classes and getting to talk to each other. And, you know, a family that just got on the waiting list for shelter and is feeling kind of discouraged, you know, about what their prospects are, they're really in crisis, being able to hook up with a family that's in our transitional housing program, Compass Clara House, where families stay for 2 years and really stabilize. And to be able to have that kind of, you know, just see that there is hope and, you know, see someone who's in a more kind of stabilized stage of the process is really kind of helpful and interesting.
Terrific. So we've talked a lot about all the progress you've made. What has been, for each of you, I want to answer this, what has been the biggest challenge so far in getting this off the ground? Let's start with Caroline from Twitter.
I think the biggest challenge is really around designing the right amount of programming for the right folks with this kind of intention of it being for the community, by the community. And it coming down to kind of the supply and demand that some of us talked about of, you know, we had about 7 or 8 children last week for a housing workshop. And so today we had another housing workshop. So we brought in a second childcare provider and inevitably there was one infant and the mom brought the infant into the class. So we had 2 childcare providers and no children. So figuring out kind of the cadence of it just being a new startup programming of making sure that we have, like Cammy said, kind of the supply and demand of, you know, clients and volunteers there on an equal equation at the right time. And that's something that we'll just learn over time.
At the same time, for some of the folks getting services, consistency is not, paramount in their lives. And so it seems like you're going to have to be you want to have too many volunteers rather than too few. You certainly don't want someone to come and not be able to get services. At the same time, you need to set the expectations for those volunteers that there may be times when things are slow, but that's part of the deal.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And for the Twitter volunteers, the internet connection works since it's located across the street from headquarters, so they can sit and do work while they wait to offer help to a client that may ask a question when they need it.
Same question to you. Let's go to Cammy Griffiths next from the Community Technology Network. What has been the biggest challenge in planning for this for your organization?
Well, I think it's thinking about how do we track the impact that the learners are making or aren't making. It's a hard thing for us in general as an organization and the other partners that we work with. It takes a lot of time and money to set up a system by which you can track longitudinally if someone is learning, they're, you know, are gaining the skills that they were looking to gain. So I'm really thinking about that heavily as we provide some recommendations for them and looking at tools that actually can help us starting out from the very beginning, not just giving the learners like a pathway that they can follow in tracking their progress. At the end, we can see, right, this was their goal, and this is that they accomplished that goal. So I really want to be mindful that we actually know what the impact is that we're making.
And same question to you, Erica Kish from Compass Family Services, the challenges you face so far.
Well, I would agree with Caroline that supply and demand is a huge challenge. And I've definitely had some sleepless nights where I've wondered, like, maybe no one will show up. But I think, you know, once we get families in the habit and get them to really understand this resource, we're going to have the opposite problem. I think we're going to have huge demand and just have to make sure the supply keeps up with it. And the other piece is making sure that we have, you know, whatever the family shows up with, it might be a technology center, but whatever needs they show up that we're prepared and equipped to be able to help them and support them.
Let's go to an email now. And again, if you'd like to email in a question, the email address is cityvisions@klw.org. And our phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. We have an email from Melissa in San Francisco, and she asks, beyond the 6 years of payroll tax exemption, does Twitter intend to keep NeighborNest open and running? Will Twitter keep funding it? Caroline.
So thanks for the question. I would say that this is just the beginning of what we're planning on doing. We intend to continue to learn and grow with our investment in the Neighbor Nest and do that in partnership with phenomenal organizations like Compass Family Services, Boys and Girls Club, Larkin Street Youth Services. And while there may be a tax break that ends in a few years, Twitter employees will continue to give back to the community each and every day for many, many more years to come, as long as Twitter's headquartered here, which we plan to be.
To what extent does the tax break motivate this partnership, or is this something that you think Twitter would be doing anyway?
Twitter's founders cared a lot about being a force for good, and the technology that we've created and the platform we've done and the company that we've built. And so I think that this is something that employees care about doing and wanting to do, independent of any tax break that the company's had with San Francisco.
And, you know, again, in the political climate we're in right now, where there is so much change happening in San Francisco, we have a huge tech boom, which is bringing great benefits to the city, but also bringing tremendous challenges to the city. Could a high-profile partnership like this, I'd like to ask each of you this, to what extent do you think this can help move the conversation forward and get past the fighting we've seen in the past? Whatever your views on the payroll tax, it passed. So now how can we all work together to make the city better? To what extent can this partnership really be a guiding light for others to follow in this path and get more folks, more nonprofits, and more tech companies to work together to benefit a population that is struggling with the changes? And let me start with you, Cami Griffiths.
So I think what I admire most about the situation is that Twitter has focused in on a few organizations and really said, we're in it for the long run, and we really want to see change happen. So if other tech companies could sort of adopt not necessarily a nonprofit, but perhaps a cause, and really get involved in that cause, not just one day, but ongoing deep involvement in the community, where people at their company actually know the names and perhaps even the children's names of the families that they're serving. And that way, not only will those families' lives be impacted, but the employees will learn a lot about the challenges that are being faced by the family. So if we could just have some deeper connection, some deeper involvement, the money's great, but really a commitment to make change and to learn about the issues is really important.
Erica Kish.
I would agree. You know, the Twitter Nest model is a great model just because, you know, clearly this is a building and a center that's built. So, you know, no one's going to walk away from this in a couple of years. It's there and it will be supported, and it will flourish. And, you know, we work with other tech companies who are making commitments where, you know, they want to be involved, they want to come out and work with our families, work with our kids, also contribute, you know, financially. And I think, you know, a lot of these companies are young, they're new, they're figuring out kind of what their niche is. And we've had some good results and some good partnerships so far, and we're pretty optimistic about it.
And Twitter's perspective on that question.
So Twitter Neighbor Nest is really committed to having a diverse community and creating these new possibilities together, both through technology and also just a love of learning. There's a great story of one of the Twitter employees and his team going out to In-N-Out Burger a couple weeks ago, and this little boy coming up and saying, "Hi, Brian," and then running off. And the team said, like, "Brian, how do you know that kid?" And he's like, "Oh, I volunteer with him at Boys and Girls Club." And just once again, like Cami said, for us to know each other by name in the neighborhood, for us to be able to support each other and have the Neighbor Nest be this real bridge builder for the community to connect with community.
Terrific. And I want to ask, so this is just getting off the ground now. I assume there's kind of a summer program. And then you already talked about some of the things for the school year, like the school uniforms getting passed out and how you tie that in. Where do you see this a year from now? How much progress do you expect to see? What's your vision a year from now or even 5 years from now for what this could become?
The Twitter Neighbor Nest, I imagine being a vibrant part of the Tenderloin community, of the mid-market community, where Twitter volunteers come, make connections, both as students and as teachers, learning with our nonprofit partners, learning with their clients, where clients of great organizations like Compass have success stories of having found housing, having found employment, having gained confidence, building their skills, creating a community of learning together through the Twitter Neighbor Nest.
And what about you, Erica? Where do you see this in a year?
Well, you know, despite my sleepless nights about no one showing up, I actually think it's going to be a pretty booming, vibrant center. I think, you know, right now we're really just taking it week by week, figuring out, like, what are the needs? What are the interests? What are people looking for? And still getting a lot of feedback. And it will always be kind of in, as Caroline says, always in beta. But, you know, I think we'll have a little bit better of an idea in a year. You know, what are the regular programmings that we should be offering? And I think right now it's like so much of it is a test run. And then we'll have a little more confidence and we'll know more what we're doing.
Cammy Griffiths.
I would love to see hundreds of folks having the kind of computer skills they need for daily life so that they can do the things they need to do without anybody's help. I'd love to see people having internet at home. I know it's not, some people simply can't afford it. They move around too much, but that would make a huge impact if they had internet access at home as well as the computer skills. And lastly, to have dozens and dozens of learner-trainer pairs, and that there's some deep connections being made between these pairs and that there's a lot of really great learning happening and that both the Twitter employee is learning from the learner as well as the learner learning from the trainer.
Yeah, and just to build on what Cammy has to say, I think this is a community space, the Twitter Neighbor Nest, and that the community feels like it's built by them for them. And I think that that's really important, is that ownership, that collective ownership of the space and what programming happens. So I think success will be that the programming is designed by the community for the community.
And just a quick follow-up on that, as we're almost out of time, but how do you get the community to – how did you create that safe space where they do feel ownership of it? Because you're this huge company coming into a neighborhood where they've lived for years.
So I've been a resident of San Francisco for 20 years, and I've worked in the nonprofit space and the startup space. Starting with the listening tour, I think, was really, really important to go in and say, you know, here are some concepts, some architectural drawings, but what do you think and where do you think the kitchen should be and the living room and the classroom? What do you think the programming should be? And really having the design be informed by that listening tour helped people say, I was there since the beginning. I was part of this, and now it's real. It's a dream come true of now it's a physical space. I can come and bring my child, provide healthy snack, get the child care, get the classes, and that they feel as though they were part of it from the very beginning, I think has been helpful to the early success of the programs there.
And certainly if people put in ideas early on that they're now seeing become reality, that's a big deal.
It is. It definitely is. And we really value the diversity of perspective of the Neighbor Nest. And we really want to say, yes, it's always in beta, but it is yours to own and design with us.
Okay, a final question from a local resident emailed in. What is the exact address of Neighbor Nest?
The exact address of Neighbor Nest is 95 Hay Street off of Polk.
Okay, so for listeners out there in the neighborhood who want to stop by, that's where you can go. We're out of time tonight. That's the City Visions for this evening. My guests tonight were Caroline Berlerin from Twitter, Cammy Griffiths from the Community Technology Network, and Erica Kish from Compass Family Services. Thanks to all of you for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on klw.org. Our engineer this evening was Debbie Kennedy. Tonight's show was produced by Sarah Stotter. Next week on the program, we'll discuss how to find up-and-coming Bay Area neighborhoods. I'm David Onick. Thanks for listening. Good night, and have a great week.
The sights.
And the sounds.
The sights and sounds of Bayview.
Bayview. Bayview.
Join KLW for a night of live storytelling in San Francisco's Bayview Hunters Point.
They would butcher the hogs, throw them in the water. So this place smelled to high heaven for many years.
Learn how activists are cleaning up a historic waterway and come hear more stories of people who live and work in Bayview. Be there, 7 p.m., Friday, June 19th at the Joseph Lee Rec Center. Music, dance, photo booth, prizes, and great stories. It's all happening out in the Bayview. For more information, go to KALW.org.
This is 91.7 KALW San Francisco Local Public Radio. You can find us online at KALW.org. I'm Debbie Kennedy with you until midnight. KALW is supported by listeners like Bob Gutierrez of San Mateo and Barbara Kohler of Fairfax. Your commitment keeps KALW independent and locally focused. Thank you so very, very much for your support. The time is 8 o'clock, and as it happens, from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in Toronto is next. Stay tuned.
Hi there, I'm Carol Off.
And I'm Jeff Douglas, coming up on As It Happens.
Once again, there are reports that Mukhtar Belmukhtar is dead. And once again, there are counter reports saying he's not. Tonight, I'll speak with former Canadian diplomat Robert Fowler, who's watching the news about the elusive jihadi leader with particular interest because Mr. Belmukhtar